Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you. First of all, who we are. I was a little disappointed when Paul did his session and he put up examples of shared services and he didn't mention us. I know Chris this morning would have said ULCC and how old they were. Actually, we are an agency of Universities UK and Guild HE. HEXU is set up as a charity and then Prospects is the commercial trading arm of the charity. And we were formed in 1972. We had a big anniversary party the other week for our 40th birthday. The way it's been set up is all UK HEIs are members and stakeholders of HEXU. And we provide a range of central services to HEIs. And it was interesting what was just being said there about the top-down and bottom-up. The first share, how we were set up back in 1972 was to provide some shared services to career services, and basically it was six appointments boards who said, wouldn't it be useful in the summer if we could share the vacancy lists amongst ourselves? So they set up a little office in Manchester with a Gestetner machine and were literally churning out shared vacancy lists for those graduate jobs. And it mushroomed from there. More so, said, oh, can we have copies of the list? Can it be spread? And eventually we grew and now all universities are members and we provide a range of services out to the career services. And then following the Harris Review of Postgraduate Education in 1996, we had a very different set of instructions from our owners from university, which was to create a national postgraduate database. And that came as top down. So we said we do need a single authoritative source of postgraduate information, a database of all the courses. Can you, as an agency of HE, collect all that data? So we then had the job of collecting from 166 and running the national database. And our new central service is Higher Education Degree Data Check, which is now working with registries in universities, which is an entirely new set of customers for us. And in a lot of cases, when we've been going around and talking to universities, the registries have not known anything about the other services we provide out to their institution. So this is new for us. But again, this is going to be bottom-up because we are working, although it's HEFCE-funded and started out of HEFCE, this is working with registries from the ground up. What is HED, the Higher Education Degree Data Check, is an official sector-owned suite of web services around qualification verification. That's the posh term for it. And the background to this is it came out of the whole shared services programme. It's funded out of UMF by HEFCE. There was a feasibility study back in 2008 that found that it was costing in resources over £2 million a year to English universities to answer incoming inquiries about the qualifications of their graduates. So actually this came from the efficiencies agenda, but I was very interested to hear people talk today and say that actually what's pushing buttons for people in shared services is not the issue of how much money will it save, but are we getting better services? So although this came from a background of this work is costing universities, this isn't really what HED is going to deliver in terms of benefits. It also found that there was a lot of confusion amongst employers about the legitimacy of institutions and degrees. There is a list on the BIS website that tells you all the valid degree awarding bodies in the UK, but it only gives you the current ones. It doesn't tell you any mergers, any old names, any history. And there is confusion about, you know, whether things are real institutions. There is no standardised process for checking. All 166 universities act independently, have their own processes. Some people want faxes, some people want emails, some people need consent. So there's no standard way even for somebody who wants to make a check of knowing what's going to happen. Each one acts independently there. And there is an issue of fraud. Although the feasibility study couldn't exactly pinpoint what the levels of fraud were around degrees, simply because a lot of cases go undetected. There are about 450 detected cases a year, but the amount of actual fraud is expected to be significantly higher. But there is a successful model for this in the USA, and this was mentioned in the feasibility study. There's something called the Student Clearinghouse. About 90% of American universities make their records available through the Student Clearinghouse, and you can go and check up on graduate qualifications. So there is a precedent for a central service being successful in this area and working for universities. Let's talk about fraud for a little bit. Britain is the European capital for bogus universities, twice as many unaccredited institutions as accredited ones. I've got a Twix in my handbag for the first person who can tell me what's wrong with this certificate. I got a call from the Met Police about a month ago saying, we've had somebody come in, they're acting as an independent witness in a case, as an expert witness, and they've got a postgraduate degree in transport law, and we need to know whether that degree is genuine or not. Could you tell us, as you run the postgraduate database, whether there is indeed a course in transport law that was running back in 2004? So I went to our postgraduate database and I checked, and I said, yes, there were courses in transport law at that time run out of London universities, and so we can check that up for you. I said, can you send me the certificate and we'll have a proper look? And she sent me the certificate. And actually, I realised I'd wasted an hour of my time checking whether there was a course on transport law running, because the degree certificate says it's from Chelsea University, which doesn't and has never existed in the UK. But the person who had that Chelsea University certificate that was acting as an expert witness in a court case had also got letters of recommendation from Chelsea University. And I just highlighted there the address. Chelsea University, 630 Draycott Place, London, an address that doesn't actually exist. And if you spend 1 minute on Google Maps, you can see that there is no such address. There were transcripts, there were other letters of recommendation, all completely false from this person who was just purporting to be an expert. This was a degree certificate I found on the internet. I typed in degree certificate and somebody very proud of themselves put their certificate up for everybody to see, Ian Frentzen, who graduated from Leeds. All the statistics, all of the surveys will tell you that about a third of applicants will admit to lying or embellishing on their CVs. And the most common exaggeration is around degree classifications. And very quickly, it took me about 5 minutes on Photoshop. You can't see it in there, but it says that Ian got a 2.2. And I decided that actually what Ian really needs is a 2.1. And it took very little time to change that 2.2 to a 2.1 on that certificate. We ran some research back in May this year, asking students and graduates how they felt about degree fraud, or maybe sort of exaggerating a little bit about their degree qualifications in light of higher tuition fees and whether they thought it would have any effect. And about half of them think that the higher tuition fees will make graduates more likely to lie on their CVs. Not the half we interviewed, obviously, none of them would lie, but they knew somebody who would do so. And two-thirds of them said buying a fake degree might actually be more tempting, given the difficulties in the job market. So that's a bit of background. But a lot of that fraud happens simply because there isn't an easy way to check. There are no standard processes. If you're an employer, if you're a third party, if you want to check with universities, you've got to ring 160 individually, or you've got to email them, or you've got to fax them, or you've got to use their online form. And it's actually very hard. And the research we did with employers showed that actually they didn't perceive there was a great risk. They were happy to take CVs on trust or take certificates on trust, because they didn't believe it went on. But we know from studies that it does. So HED was designed as a central service to, first of all, provide a lookup database of valid UK degree awarding bodies, past and present. So what it's got, if you go to HED, it will tell you that if you've got a CV of somebody who graduated from the University of Paisley, it will tell you that Paisley was a valid degree awarding body between 1996 and 2007 and is now part of the University of the West of Scotland. And if you want to verify a graduate from that university, you can then go to the West of Scotland and it tells you that you have to send them a fax or they need a student consent. So it tells you how you can make that inquiry about that Paisley graduate at the University of the West of Scotland. It also has a database of known bogus institutions, and Chelsea University is one of the bogus ones listed in there. As I said, it gives you details of how to make that inquiry. And it can also now, additionally, provide an online real-time student verification service for inquirers. And it's including for other HEIs, the idea being that obviously HEIs do recruit graduates both into their postgraduate courses or into employment at their institution, and they need to make those checks as well. And for anybody who's involved in a higher education achievement report, it will also verify against HEAR data too. It provides a suite of flexible inquiry management tools for the universities using it to handle incoming inquiries, and it's been developed and owned by the sector for its member HEIs. And this is the point where I stood up last year and said to everyone, right, who wants to sign now? Who's got a pen? Who's going to sign up for HED straight away? Because obviously this is going to be a brilliant service for universities. I went on to talk about the benefits, and a lot of those benefits were for the HEIs in particular. I talked about the benefits to students and graduates. I talked about the benefits to universities too. UK PLC, and I've got slides on this. I'm not really going to talk about those benefits because at the time that we talked about these last year, these were perceived. This is what we thought would happen. And so I'm going to skip through these slides. Benefits to students and graduates. The key one there really is to protect them from fraudsters. So those individuals who have spent the time investing in a degree, investing all of that money, all those tuition fees, making sure they're not disadvantaged in the job market or that they lose out the opportunity of a postgraduate course place to somebody else who is a fraudster. There are great benefits to recruiters. The people who don't make those checks, who put themselves at risk of recruiting people from Chelsea University or recruiting people who've got a 2-2 when they've said they've got a 2-1. And as I said, there's low perception of risk. They find it really hard to make the checks. And the staggering fact is that about of the major graduate recruiters, people who recruit graduates in their thousands onto their management schemes, about 80% of them never check back with the university. They will rely on CVs and rely on certificates. So they've spent a huge amount of their recruitment budgets attending university fairs, giving presentations, holding assessment centres, and right at the end of the process, they don't actually check with the university that that person does have the degree they say. So this will deliver benefits for them because it will be a very simple way from one place that they can make multiple inquiries. Again, I'm back to that bit about where do I sign, where, you know, how can I sign up for this now? It clearly is going to work for everybody. And the benefits that are felt for recruiters and for universities will just escalate out and be scalable and be felt across the UK. But I don't really want to talk about those today. What I want to talk about is a Manchester case study. So for the past year, 2 years, I've been delivering pretty much that talk out to universities, talking about the wider sector benefits and trying to get people behind this new shared service. And the reality is that in the year or so since I've been doing this, we've got very few universities actually live. It's taken this long, and we've got 3 universities live on the system. We've got Manchester, we've got Sheffield Hallam, and we've got Essex. And I have spent a year visiting registries and talking about this, waiting for people to get their pens out and sign up, and I've come across a variety of objections. And what I've realised is that the whole point about shared services is that the benefits for all, the bigger picture benefits, have to be incidental to the direct local benefits to the universities themselves. So as our members, as our developing the service, it's got to work for them at a local level. So what we've been doing with our early adopters, with our pilot institutions, is building something that delivers for frontline staff at a local university. And we know then that those umbrella benefits will follow. So I really want to focus the session this afternoon is talking about what it's meant to Manchester. And Mike Mercer from Manchester has been and spoken with me before and talked about what it's meant for Manchester. But it was really the journey with them and with Sheffield Hallam for us over the last year that's made us rethink what HED is going to deliver, why it's going to work, and what it's going to mean to universities. Because very little of what Mike said talked about the savings in pounds, shillings and pence that they were going to make at Manchester. It was a very different set of benefits that they would get. The background to Manchester, why when we went to them, Mike did get his pen out and say yes and sign on that dotted line for me, was that the requests for verification of awards to University of Manchester had increased by 100% in 4 years. And Mike had a very, very stressed team. They handled their inquiries by fax or by email. So they'd got email generic boxes coming in. They'd got faxes that came off machines and sat on desks and then were maybe handled by 2 or 3 different people until it got resolved. They had very limited tracking or reporting. So these things weren't logged. When they were resolved, they weren't ticked off to say, yes, that's been done. And the same pieces of paper, the same inquiries could have been handled over and over again. And what that also led to was a great duplication of effort by his team. A very overworked team, and he actually said at one of the events I went to with him that in their employee opinion survey last year at Manchester, the registry staff scored very low for morale and very high for stress levels simply because this work was getting on top of them. They were also part of a HEAR pilot allowing students to have access to their HEAR records, HEAR information centrally, in the hope that if the students could access that information and give employers access to it, that it would reduce the burden of work. But actually, since they've had that system up, it hadn't really had any impact on their staff in the registry. So why did he get his pen out and say yes to HED? Well, he said it was very easy to use. And I think we'd kind of forgotten that what we built was a very simple system. It was designed to do very simple things. And I'm very conscious from what Nigel said earlier about shared services, that, you know, you set them up, they have a specific goal in mind, and then they start to develop other services, and then they stretch. And eventually you get full circle, people saying, we can deliver this better on a local level. And actually I have sort of used that story of his, and we will bear it in mind. But it's very simple, it does a very specific job, and it's only designed to do that very specific job. There is a low setup cost and a low cost of ownership. So it hasn't got to go right the way up to the Vice Chancellor to get an enormous checkbook out with lots of zeros on to take part. So that was attractive to them. The fact that it was a shared service, that it's a sector initiative run by a sector agency, was particularly attractive as well. They liked the idea of being part of something that was owned by the sector, and that they'd have the chance to develop it and have a say in how it was run and the directions it took. That was attractive too. And also for them, he could see immediately that as well as the benefits for his team in the registry, the benefits for their HR team and their postgrad admissions team, who equally had a big burden of work checking the qualifications of applicants to employment or applicants to postgraduate study at their institution, would benefit as well, because they'd be able to use the service. And I looked back at the feasibility study when it's done. Nobody asked postgraduate departments or HR departments. That whole £2.1 million that Hefke were looking to save was all about the registry. And nobody'd really considered that there was a big burden of work elsewhere as well. In terms of the outcomes for Manchester, they actually deployed it in May 2012. It took a year to get it off the ground internally because there was a huge amount of work with data sets. I mean, if you know about Manchester, we'd got University of Victoria records, we'd got UMIST records, we'd got their old student record system, we'd got their current student record system. So there was a huge amount of data to deal with and get it. And they felt that they needed to get all the data sorted out and then go with HED and go live. So they went live in May 2012. And the outcomes for them, we've got a written case study which will circulate to people, is they had an instant drop in inquiries. And we think a lot of this is because people were getting an answer fairly quickly. So they weren't chasing up phone calls after the fax they'd sent had been around three people's desks. So they had an instant drop in inquiries there. Also, all of the customer service is handled through HED Help. So all of the initial, or any inquiry, any queries coming from the inquirers come to HED first, so they don't even reach the registry. So the people who couldn't use the system or are chasing up when they're getting an answer, all the customer service is handled by HED. So that was taking away a lot of harassed inquirers on the phone from university, making them feel better in the registry. For them, the turnaround time on the award inquiries actually halved. So it was taking half the processing time to get that inquiry sorted out through HED than it was before with their manual system, with their own system. But the benefit of that meant that they were able to turn around their student services much more quickly. And they said in terms of providing transcripts or status letters to current students, they were able to deal with those a lot more quickly because they didn't have this burden of work from third-party inquirers coming in. So for them, that was really important, that they were delivering a better service to their students. On a practical level, they would normally have had full-time temporary staff over the summer. And it meant this summer they did not have to recruit temporary staff. The system was able to handle it for them without the cost of temps. So there was a cost saving there. But more importantly, at very busy graduation times, their staff were able to remotely access the system and check on it and check inquiries online, even if they were somewhere else on campus or in the big marquee that's on the lawns outside our offices. So they were able to keep track of it at all times without actually physically being in the office. That's a direct quote from one of their registry teams. No persecution by inquirers. I mean, it was, I wouldn't say, it was their own fault in that they were double handling, treble handling things, and that it spiraled out of control. But they did end up being persecuted by inquirers, because a lot of those inquirers come in from screening agencies, and they've got a student or a graduate who's waiting to know whether they've got accommodation, or they're waiting to see if they can have their Oyster card in London, or they're waiting to see if they've got that offer of employment. So we had a lot of screening agencies saying to us, it's a nightmare trying to get answers out of universities. You know, we're trying to give one of their graduates a job here. We're getting paid by a client to do the screening checks and the background checks, and it's taking them 3 weeks to come back with an answer. But you can see why some of those situations might arise. So that had also helped. Another benefit which they didn't anticipate is an increased use of that student system. And we think maybe this is partly because HED is a paid-for service. So whereas an inquirer could harass Manchester 3 or 4 times and send them emails and faxes, and it wasn't actually costing anything, they were getting their answer back. Now they've got to pay. They're getting a better service, but they've got to pay a small administration fee to HED, because obviously we have to run it. And we think that might be acting as a little bit of a deterrent. And what's happening is now the students are saying, well, I could go into the student system and get my HEAR report or get my status letter and get it off for you and give access. So they've now got increased use of that system, which again is saving them time there in the registry. We have been asking for evidence. Part of our remit in reporting back to HEFCE is to provide an evidence base. So we have to try and track and get some estimates of what that saving is going to be so we can see how much of that £2.1 million we can eat into. And Manchester, because they'd got such a large set of records, such a large graduated cohort over the last however many years, have estimated that they will save about 100 days resource a year on this. Which is great for them, but I think that the real benefit for them is how their staff feel. They're not caught up in routine work. They're not answering the phone to harass people. They can actually get on and deal with students. They're feeling much better about their job. But they will save about 100 days a year. He did mention it, but it's not on the slides there. They also do get a revenue stream, because the way it works with its members is that the revenue that's generated by the inquirers paying a small fee to use the verification service is shared back with the institutions. So by putting their inquiries through HED, they will also generate an income stream. And the business model we have for HED shows that in most cases, most universities who will pay a small subscription to use the service will get that subscription back in revenue share and make a modest income in the process. And of course, it does mean that for their HR departments and their postgrad departments, it's free to use as well. At the last event that I did with Mike, I said, you know, what advice would you give to people if they're interested in HED? And these are the things that he put through and said, so I'm sort of reading off his words here. He said, but consider doing this sooner rather than later. The benefits are instant and measurable. And the measurability was a key factor for them. They do have to report upwards. And one of the key things with HED is the ability to track and report and audit. We know that that burden of work is increasing in all universities. All of the research has shown that registries are more busy. More people are making verification checks. And if some of those fraud stories make bigger headlines, if more employers start making more checks, that burden of work is only going to increase. So, you know, they can measure it, so they can report on things. And we know MIS in universities is ever more important now. We get that from our career service customers who are asked to report on student access, students' use of their systems, you know, what's happening. Everybody wants measurements and quantitative information up there. Mike would say to people, don't wait for the IT team to be ready. Don't wait for your data to be perfect and in shape. You can have the system straight away. You can use the system straight away. You don't have to get your student records uploaded. You can just use the system to handle that information straight away. And he would also say, don't underestimate the benefits to the wider institution when more universities in the system. That's it. That's the point. Sorry. I'll rewind that. He said, don't... you know, be conscious that if more universities go in, those benefits will be more widely felt. And he's very, you know, he's very, they've got their HR department and postgrad departments waiting to use HED to check on people, applicants to employment and courses. But obviously they're very limited at the moment because there's only 3 live institutions. So that's what I'd say about Manchester. In terms of progress on HED, a few more people have now got their pens out, which is lovely, and they have signed up to use the service. There's about 150 universities engaged with HED so far with the university lookup service. And that service itself is savings, is providing time. People are getting to the right place the first time. We were told from universities there's a lot of duplication of calls where they go, no, you don't want us, you want Manchester Metropolitan University down the road. Or, no, we didn't used to be the University of Lampeter. Actually, you now want to get to Trinity St David's down the road. And things like that. So it's saved a lot of effort there. We know from inquirers it's really, really useful having the information in one place that they can actually find out how to make those inquiries. I mean, I've visited university websites and I know what I'm looking for. I'm looking for words like verification or for registry or confirm and things like that. If you're just an inquirer and you just want to find out how you can check up on a graduate, on some university websites, it's really difficult to get that information and to really see where you need to go. And everybody, as I said, has a completely different system. And so it is taking a lot of time there. We visited about 60 universities at the moment, and we've done demonstrations. Actually, that's probably a little bit out of date. It's probably nearer 70. We've got 40 very positive about the system who are in one stage of decision-making or another, and about 24 in one stage of implementation or another. I think Nottingham are going to go live next Monday. Imperial was supposed to be live, but they're going to be January now. And then we've got Swansea and Greenwich and Sussex and Winchester will be the next bunch. But it's taking quite a lot of time because they're having to change internal processes. And I was very interested in what you said about people there, Paul, that actually it's the people who will make the changes. And at Manchester, it was hugely important having Mike Mercer championing this and saying, I can see how this is going to benefit us as an institution, and I'm going to make this happen. And I think, well, if they can make it happen in Manchester, which has the biggest, most complicated set of data, with the merger in particular, created those particular problems, if they can make it work there, then we can make it work at any institution. So it's really important to have somebody champion that for us. We've got 130 bogus universities flagged in the system. I've actually had four separate reports in this week via email through Head Help of people saying, I'm thinking of applying to this South Asia university that's based in Mayfair in London. Can you? But I'm concerned that it might not be a genuine university. And I said, we will check it out for you. So we didn't have them on our list, but we have now got them on our list. The dubious websites pop up and disappear at will. A lot of them have something, you know, a .ac address, which is actually an Ascension's Island domain. So you can get if you register your website in the Ascension Islands, it will give you a .ac domain. But obviously, it's not a .ac.uk domain. But the websites pop up and then they disappear as fast as they come. But we put them on Head, and these were prospective students really worried because they were looking somewhere locally in India, and they said, "Oh yes, and we've got our, you know, it's a UK based university." So we were able to tell them that this is not and has never been a valid degree awarding body in the UK. So it's not. The fraud is perpetuated not just by those who might, you know, inflate their grade to get that 2-1 instead of the 2-2. There are people looking to fleece the genuine people who would like to come and study in the UK, who purport to be, well, they say they have offices in Mayfair, or they have an address in London that doesn't exist, and universities like that. So it's, you know, it's really important that we do protect the interests of people who genuinely want to come and study here. We've worked very hard in the talks we've done over the last year to get endorsement from BIS. If you go to the BIS site now, it now links to Head, because it will say if you want information on old universities or you want to look at bogus institutions, you can go to the Head site. The NUS are now formally supporting it and saying, yeah, we think it's really important. You know, our members, our students and graduates, their interests need to be protected when they're applying for employment and postgrad study. The CBI are very interested in this, and we're working with their HE liaison office. And obviously, as an agency of UUK and Guild, it's very important to them that it works for their members. And I thought, again, a year ago, that having a slide like that that said, yes, we've got endorsement from key stakeholders would be important. But it's really what's happened at the local level that's actually making this work now, and having some evidence, having case studies, being able to show that it delivers benefits at a local level is what's making people now sign up and join the service. So as we've got more institutions joining, the wider benefits will be felt. So in terms of advice on shared services, I would say very much focus on that local level. If it isn't going to work for the frontline staff and work in that locale, then the one size fits nobody is what you're going to have. Pinching your quote there, but I will use that again too. In terms of the big picture, back to the big picture again, we are integrating with Project DARE. I don't know if any of you know what Project DARE is, but this is a way of accessing, well, it's Digital Academic Records Exchange, and the idea being that you can access official university documents via the cloud if people want to access documentation. So the idea being that this is the student interface that people can have, like at Manchester, where it's a local version. DARE means that institutions can sign up, and via the cloud they can have access to that service, and their own students can go to their own local site and access official documents from that site. So again, it means they won't have to provide that service from the registry. It can be done online. The way it's working with Head is, I said, well, that doesn't really change, although it might be the same service at each local institution. The third party inquirer, the screening agency or the employer, has still got to log in to individual versions of DARE or get their applicants to log in and get those things from separate locations. So what we're doing with HED and DARE as an integrated service is to allow inquirers in HED, if they wish to see a document, they can actually request that document from HED. So they can go into their single portal and they can say, yes, I want to see the document for that particular applicant. And it might be that what they need, if they're a legal firm, they might want to see the marks breakdown or they might need to see the course information. Certain employers would like more broken down information, which is the kind of stuff you'll get in here. The control stays in the hands of the student, whose documents they are, because an inquirer can request access through HED, but when it goes into DARE, it will then ask the data subject for permission to show those documents. So it stays in the hand of the student. The control is with the student at all times. And I said it will include here as well as standard information. I think some people are putting status letters into DARE. Other people are putting letters for local authorities, or they're putting transcripts in there. So there's a variety of documents that will be secure from that institution that are available through DARE. And it means that inquirers will be able to get them through HED as well. We've been asked about next steps for HED. What kind of other services could HED provide? How can we expand it without losing sight of that very valuable local service it provides? One is to actually extend the University Lookup database beyond the UK borders into Europe to start with. We're all fairly familiar in this country with who are the universities, who are the valid degree awarding bodies. The situation gets a little muddier when you get to HE colleges. So we will be looking to add colleges to that as well, so we can say which are valid colleges or which colleges deliver HE and are validated by other institutions, so we'll have that. But we'd like to include information on universities across Europe. So particularly, again, for postgraduate departments, where they're getting applicants from universities overseas, they'll be able to see that, yes, that is a valid degree awarding body in Bulgaria or in France or in Austria, and it will make their job easier. If particularly, it also has the information about how they can verify an applicant from there. So it tells them how to check, how to email, whether they'll ever be part of the candidate verification for HED, I doubt, but at least the universities will be able to access that information overseas. We're talking to the UK Border Agency at the moment about including Tier 4 status. We're trying to talk to them when they will answer their phones, but we'd like to be able to quickly show, yes, this is somebody that has highly trusted sponsor status, and this is really for overseas students who want to check out whether they can come and study in the UK at this particular institution. And again, that will apply probably more to colleges than the universities, where the picture is slightly less clear. So we want to introduce that. It'll be a very quick additional piece of information that can be there on HED, and it will allow people to just check, yes, I can, that does have Tier 4 status. Here Light, I put up there, I cringe at the title, but it's the best way to describe it at the moment. We know there are the Higher Education Achievement Report is a huge document. It's a 5 or 6 page document. But we know from the work that the pilot projects are doing, and particularly the work that Rob Ward's doing at the CRA, they've been doing work with employers to say, how will you want to use HERE records? How will you make use of that information? The feedback that's coming back from employers says they probably don't want to see the full thing, but they want to drill down to some of the information contained therein. And we think, we're fairly certain that what we can do through HED is deliver some of the key elements of the HERE report through HED. So if somebody just wanted to see the course modules, if it was particularly important to them, they wanted to see the breakdown of the courses, or if they wanted to access the 6.1 information on extracurricular activity, or if they wanted to see the marks breakdowns, we should be able to deliver that information through as a verification via HED, rather than them have to request the full document, which isn't particularly user-friendly for recruitment practices for employers, but is the kind of valuable information that they want to be able to check on candidates when they're applying. So that's where we are. So on that note, does anybody have any questions, anything they'd like to ask about? I've probably got another Twix if I can anticipate the first question.
Okay. Well, you probably know from the reaction of my face when you were answering something else, probably. I think it sounds like a very, really wonderful service. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that would obviously help the student, help the university, so it's a win-win all round. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think from our university's perspective, one of the things we might be cautious about would be data protection.
Yes, you do get a Twix. In fact, there are two Twixes, because that is one of the key questions. We've been working with the Information Commissioner's Office from the start on this. Going forward, we are asking participating universities to include supplying data to HED as part of the student collection notice. So going forward, students will be made aware that their data might be available through HED. HED does not actually process information or give information out. What it does is confirm to an inquirer that the information they've been given by a student is correct or not correct. So the inquirer, an inquirer has to register, they have to agree to our data protection rules, they have to have the consent of the student, and what they say is, I've got these seven pieces of information about a graduated student. Can you tell me whether that information is correct? So nobody can use it for phishing. Nobody can say, let's track down all the people with a first from this institution, or that they have to have that information. The HED will just tell them whether that information is matched or not. So it's just verifying. So there's no data processed in that way. So that fulfills data protection issues. And I mentioned student consent. There is also the facility within HED, should the institution wish, that student consent can be uploaded, so that the inquirer can or has to upload the student consent if the university has chosen to do that. What we try to do from the point of view of the inquirers is develop a standardised process. So they come in, they register. We check the ones, if they registered with overseas addresses or if they registered with Google addresses or Hotmail, that they have to be authenticated. So they can't just come in and make an inquiry. We check them out and we contact them and we'll check out their organisation to make sure they're a bona fide inquirer. They do have to pay for the service as well, and that is a little bit of a deterrent for people. You know, they're only going to register, go through that process and pay if they genuinely have a reason for using it. And all we'll do is tell them whether the information they've got is correct or not. We don't offer up any information.
Can I just make a follow-up question on that?
Mm-hmm.
You're just verifying yes or no, but are there still data protection issues from us transferring the data to you in order for you to verify yes or no?
There aren't, because we are a registered data controller. In fact, we hold student records from universities, from their career services, all kinds of information. So we can do that, because we're acting as a contractor for you, if you like. So it is your data. Everything that transfers between us. The system's been penetration tested. We got the computer hackers in. That was fun. To make sure that it was secure. It took them about 4 minutes to break it, which was devastating news for our IT department to start with. But it did give us a whole list of things that we needed to fix, which have been fixed, and we've got reports. So we know it's secure from that point. And actually, that's something we've now put into our standard procedures, that we get the hackers in to make sure that everything we do is... And it's a good exercise. But, yeah, it was 4 minutes, I think it was.
My official degree title is BSc...
My official degree title is, I've got a BSc in Computational and Statistical Science, open brackets, Mathematical Statistics, close brackets. I can't fit that onto a standard application form. So I sometimes say I've got a degree in maths or statistics or computing.
Mm-hmm. What does it say on your certificate, though?
A degree in BSc in, as I've told you, Computational and Statistical Science, open brackets, Mathematical Statistics, close brackets. Now, I never would use that.
No.
So would that mean I will never get verified?
The way it works is we take from the institution a database of all of the courses that they want to verify against. So for example, if they want to say, we want to go back 10 years, we will have all of the courses that have run at that institution over the last 10 years in a drop-down menu. And then that's unique to that university. So it will just have courses available at Poppleton. And we ask the inquirers where they can to either see the certificate or match up what's on the certificate. You know, we try and give them help as they're going along to say, actually, your best chance of getting an automatic verification is if you can match that information that's on the degree certificate, because very often that will be what's in the student record, although not always. So they would put any one of those keywords, computational might work, and it would come up with any courses containing any of those words from the university, and then they could choose the right one. And then from that, they're then asked to put in what qualification it is. but the system filters out from those course menu only the qualifications that were available for those courses. So for all of those courses, it will show there were only, it was only a BA and an MA or an MSc available, so they can pick those. And from that, it then selects from the records how many people got 2-1s, 2-2s. But so it tries to limit and filter the options for the inquirer to maximise their chances of getting it right. So that's how it deals with that. If it doesn't appear in the drop-down menu, there is an option to just free text it in. But what it means is they won't get an automatic verification. It will be sent on to the university. So the idea is for institutions who have chosen to put their data into HED, we're trying to get the inquirers to do an auto-verification. So the system will find it and take it. But they don't have to supply us with their data. There is an option. They can just take it as an inquiry management system. Because in a lot of cases, 50% of them don't have systems or keep records. So even just having a way of having those inquiries come in from one place and be handled in one dashboard, that even with that, even if it means there's no auto-verification, it's still saving about 50% on inquiry time. So then there's no issues of transferring data, because that was a concern for some. We don't want our student records leaving our file, leaving the record. Well, actually, we could probably tell you how many of your students we've got quite good information for in our other databases. But yeah, so you don't have to do it, but that improves the service. Well, it helps to reduce the inquiry time for the inquirer and also takes a burden of work away from the registry.
Can I a follow-up question?
Yep.
Quite a lot of students start at a university and then fail and don't get a degree.
Mm-hmm.
But they have studied and they've got partial qualifications. Can an employer check that somebody was... I make a claim I was at that university for so long. Can you do that, or is it purely degree?
No, they can do it if we've got the records, or if the university... If we try and mirror what the university would normally do. If they would normally provide the information that somebody attended between X date and Y date and were on this course but did not finish or completed year one or something, if they would provide that information. What we've also done, as I've mentioned, this standardised service, so the inquirers see a fairly standardised way of making the inquiry. But from the point of view of the universities, we've had to, on this bottom-up road, develop different, slightly different services from the back. So it's a flexible service from behind the scenes that mirrors what that university would do. Because initially we worked on, we'll just give them a yes-no, and then they'll have to go back to the candidate and say, no, the system says no, and you have to go back and check with the candidate. But some universities said to us, to be honest, if we could see that inquirer was a public body, we'd probably tell them that they'd got the year of graduation 1 year out, or that it was actually a slightly different attendance date. So we said, well, we can build in the mechanism whereby if you're comfortable, you can actually correct the information and give them the right answers. So we try and mirror what they would do. Some universities said, no, we wouldn't give it out. They said, well, don't do it. But we've built in options so they set their own turnaround times. So at busy times, i.e. in graduation, they can say, you know, it's probably going to take us 5 days. But because the inquirer is getting a screen that says, your answer will be back in the next 5 days. They don't have to chase it up. But then they get an overdue flag and they chase, and we might give them a prompt. But, you know, they can set things. So we've given a facility behind the scenes for them to give more information if they want to. And if they're comfortable that that meets with their data protection policies at the institution. And in most cases, when we're visiting them, I say, bring your DP officer along. We've got a policy. We can explain how it all meets that. But we're giving them the option, if they want to provide more information, they can. In most cases, universities have told us they'd be happy to supply the attendance dates. If somebody had got all of the other information right, they'd give them the dates. And because that's proved hugely problematic in trying to get an automatic match. Because when the student thinks they were at university, may not match at all the actual attendance dates that the university's got. So it's very often a mismatch there. We've also tried to look at doing some soft matching as well, with middle names and things where it's problematic. You know, we're trying to get the inquirer to have an instant answer. So if we can do some soft matching that's comfortable for the university, we do that. But the biggest positive really has been that filtering. So we're trying to make sure the inquirer can maximise their chances of getting an instant answer and taking that whole piece of work away from the registry.
Have you considered extending this to the Learner Record Service, the ULN, to get information from there? Because it goes beyond. It's a history of people's educational achievement.
We talked to the Learner Record Service when it first came out and said, you know, as part of the Learner Record Service, do you want to be able to have HE information filtering through into what was my app. And they said, no, they were quite happy to keep it at GCSE and A-level. They didn't want it. But they were quite happy to link through to a HE service. But no, they didn't envisage at any point that this would become a single record. But what we have got, we've got the facility to deal with ULNs if it becomes an identifier. I mean, at the moment, we want to make sure that there's, you know, we don't just want somebody being able to key in it. We want to make sure they've got many more points of information so we can authenticate the inquirer and where necessary, get that student consent and make sure that, you know, we need to make sure that it's the same integrity of service that would have happened at the university were HED not to exist.
Could you please excuse me?
Yes, no problem.
Do you have a card?
I do have a card. I will get one from my bag, which I believe is at the back. So, do you have...
I've just got one simple question. It's just for background, really.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned you've got ambitions to go beyond the boundaries, go international into Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Are there similar models that you're operating now within the UK that exist within Europe? So are you partnering up or are you leading the way in effectively offering the service to the universities out there?
I was actually at a meeting last week with a number of European representatives who were all looking at this very issue in their own countries, specifically France, Italy, Norway. And a lot of them are at the point where they either have a pilot or they have a blueprint or a model, and they're trying to share information. So I was actually there thinking I was going to learn something from them, but we're a little bit further ahead than them. But we're obviously miles behind what's happening in the States, and we're really trying to learn from the National Student Clearinghouse. We think once we've got more institutions in, it will become, you know, there will be a lot of people. People have said to us, yes, we'll do it, but we don't want to be first. We want to make sure this is VHS and not Betamax, and that once we've got a sufficient number, they'll feel secure in joining and making sure that it's all working. But yes, so we are keeping in touch with European people, because ideally, if you could at least get access, if from HED it could tell you that if you want to verify a French student, instead of having to go through to the individual French universities, you can actually go to the French TET and do it there, then that will be much easier. So I think long term we'd like to be able to hook up with these things, but I think that's way down the road. But the fact that we're all talking to each other now, I think, is a good thing.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.